The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Welcome to the First Cut Podcast, Genesis Round 3 Instant Recap and review, looking forward to the final rounds, and we've got a good one on our hands. And to break it all down with me, I get to chat with him for the second time today. Greg Ducharme, welcome in, buddy.
How was the first time was fun. How was that experience for you? We got the camera, you got that nice little setup in the house there. I like that. You look good up there on the big screen.
Thank you. Yes, I do a lot of obviously like on camera stuff, but it's all always recorded. Yes. So to do something live with an earpiece in was very different for me, and hearing all these voices in your ear all the time, but it was a lot of fun. I'm glad you were there so that we could kind of vibe off of each other. But yeah, it was great.
The live thing is a completely different energy. You don't think it's going to be right. You do all this stuff recorded. You probably do it in all in one take, so it doesn't make any difference. But when the camera's on there and you know that it's live, it changes the energy. You can tell. It's one of my favorite things to do. It's a great rush.
Yeah, I know if I have to like sneeze, I can just like pause it or cut that out. Like not so much online.
Right.
But it was a lot of fun. And what else is a lot of fun, Greg, is this leaderboard we've got. Hot off the presses, a tweet hot off the presses from our buddy Kyle Porter. 40 PGA Tour wins and $155 million in earnings in the final group, which is going to be Adam Scott, Matt Kuchar, and Rory McIlroy all tied at 10 under par, Greg.
It is awesome. I mean, it's not the group you kind of expected. We had 9 of the top 10 players in the world. We do have world number one, Rory McIlroy, in the mix here. It looks like that's gonna stay. There was a chance that Jon Rahm or Brooks Koepka was able to surpass Rory again. That's not gonna happen from the looks of it. So that's pretty cool to see. And then you get a guy like Matt Kuchar, a guy like Adam Scott. You got three different styles of play. And you got an interesting mix at the top of the leaderboard. And don't forget about Dustin Johnson lurking back there, just two back. So it's a stacked leaderboard. Not necessarily what you may have predicted, but it still turned out to be pretty great. That's just a sign of the strength of this field.
Yeah, we're going to talk about each one of these guys, but what I really like about this is if you remember, Matt Kuchar goes out and shoots a 7-under-64 in round one, so he's 7-under par. We are now through 3 rounds, and the leader is only 10-under, which tournaments like this, where a course like Riviera can bite back, keep everybody close, I think makes for a great entertainment, great finishes, because we saw, and we're going to talk about some of these rounds. You have one good round of a 6-under par, a 7-under par. Hideki had a great round today. He has now re-entered and re-emerged himself in this conversation when, you know, if the winning score is 30-under par, you got to shoot, you know, 8-under every single day, you know, just to keep pace.
And you look down the leaderboard, you get the guys that are maybe tied 28. I see Brooks Koepka and Mark Leishman at that mark. They're 3-under par. There are some players at 2-under par like Patrick Cantlay, and they're probably, I mean, the odds of them getting back into contention here tomorrow are very slim. But if Brooks Koepka goes out there and shoots an 8-under par round, he goes out and shoots a 63, maybe a 62, which is a strong feat. I mean, the field, the leader right now is 10-under for a reason, because it's a really hard golf course. But if you do get one of those great rounds early, I mean, it's a number that could, there's a legitimate chance that it holds up. So that's what I love to see too. It really opens up the field.
There's going to be a big benefit to posting a number tomorrow and letting, you know, seeing if anybody can come and get you. So let's talk through these three guys here. And we'll start with Matt Kuchar because he was your first round leader. He was your 36-hole leader. He is now your 54-hole co-leader. He's going for his first PGA Tour win since the 2019 Tournament of Champions. And this would be his 10th PGA Tour victory Greg, which would break him. We're talking active players because there's a lot of guys here, but it would break the tie with someone like Brant Snedeker, who's at 9, and move him up to Sergio Garcia and Justin Rose. Obviously, they have more wins worldwide, but we're talking about their 10 PGA Tour wins. This is kind of a pretty big number when you get into double digits of tour victories.
No doubt about it. I mean, this guy is just so good. He is, I think, a very underappreciated player out on the PGA Tour. And part of the reason is it's like the Webb Simpson effect, right? There's not a lot of distance going on. It's kind of a simple looking game. And he makes it look so easy, but he's just so skillful in every area. He's got this go-to shot off the tee that just seems to work all day long. A couple tee shots got away from him out there today, but for the most part, it's as reliable as it gets. He's just taken the left side of the golf course out of play and has done fantastic work around the greens, especially this week. And he basically has designed this swing and his game to where if he has a good putting week, he's going to be right there in contention because he just keeps the ball in front of him, keeps it within the bunkers, and he's always there.
What we talked about this morning on CBS Sports HQ, which we were doing the lead-in coverage, so Kuchar was only through, I don't know, 6 or 7 holes at the time, something like that. And what we were talking about is how stressless the game was for him. Basically, he was hitting it to 20, 25 feet on every hole. If he makes the putt, great. He steals one. Otherwise, he's just tapping in from 1 foot for par, which is a great score so often here at Riviera. Now, you're right. It did get a little loose on the back nine. He comes in at 1 over. He made 3 bogeys on the back, but Kuchar's game is, I believe, what you just described. Keep everything in front and play stress-free.
And I think that really bodes well for him at a tournament like this. It's not a tournament that you want to really be pressing the golf course because it can catch up and bite you, especially when you get Sunday pins. The undulations around the greens are extreme. We heard Adam Scott say in his interview after the round, hitting greens a regulation here is such a key stat because there's so much movement when you miss a green. You have to play your chip and pitch shots really far away from the hole, and it's difficult to get them close. Well, Matt Kuchar's been able to hit the ball onto the green a lot this week, and when he's been on the green, he's converted a number of putts. So, you know, it's impressive play. I look at that little that four-hole stretch there where he went 3 over, and it seems like it really got away from him. He lost the tee shot to the right on 13, hit his second shot from 242, short right of the green, and got himself in position where he really could have made that putt. It was a makeable par putt that he missed. And then on 15, he misses it to the wide side of the hole and really has a chip that I think he could have gotten up and down and probably should have. So it was a little bit sloppy there around the greens, even though he was able to hit the fairway. And then on the very next one on 16, he hit the green and 3-whipped it. It was just, you know, he hit it past the flag and had a downhill putt. But, you know, I really like his chances still. I don't think he's going to have to do anything too crazy tomorrow. What do you think this winning score is going to be? If you're sitting there at 10, what do you have to shoot to win, in your opinion?
I'll tell you what, I think there is actually a pretty good chance, and we'll see what the tee times are. Like, what if someone at 6 under goes out and shoots like another 7 under and gets in at 13 and then it just kicks up in the afternoon? I think it's going to take more than that. I think 14 probably wins it. 15 definitely wins it.
You think, I'm kind of in the 13's a playoff. 14 wins. It just, as it gets late in the day, it's just hard for these guys to make the putts. The putt Kuchar made on 17 was huge. That was a huge putt because he was basically first to putt in that group for birdie there. And it's looking like it's really getting away from him. He hits that bunker shot. He's unable to spin it. It goes long and Rory's in there closer and he makes it on top. Rory misses. Real big turning point for me.
Yeah. So the number one player in the world, Rory McIlroy, another just ho-hum 3 under. So his first 3 rounds, 68, 67, 68. He is tied for the lead, knocking on the door yet again. I've got him for 5 bogeys this week, Greg. That's it. On a course that is biting back and, you know, giving up a lot of big numbers, a lot of crooked numbers, Rory has kept it in play. He's only made 5 bogeys, and he is just looking to solidify himself as the number one player in the world.
Yeah, there's really little to doubt about that statement there. He is right up there. And what was this so interesting today? you look at the statistics, he hit 5 of 14 fairways today, mm-hmm. which doesn't sound like a lot, but he hit 14 of 18 greens.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's the more important number. And if you watched what happened, he missed a lot of fairways. A lot of his tee shots landed in the fairway and ended up missing the fairway. It's almost like he's just too long. He hits it so far, he hits shots that end up missing fairways. So that's not really a concern of mine at all. I think the driver is becoming a real asset for him this week. It wasn't great that, you know, the first day he was missing a lot of greens and that is definitely improved. You know, he hit 9 of 18 greens round one. He's hit 13 and 14 respectively in rounds two and three. So Rory's looking really good. I mean, he's definitely the favorite, I would say, at this point. I know that you and Kyle and Chip and everybody on CBS Sports HQ this morning all picked Rory. I stuck with Kuchar. I'm going to stick with my guns on him. I think he's going to get the job done. But at this point, it's really out of pride. It's hard to bet against Rory right now.
Yeah, I actually, it's kind of gravy for me because I was saying, you know, if Rory can start tomorrow, like one, two back, like I'd really like his chances. Well, he doesn't even have to do that. He's going to be tied for the lead with Kuchar and the last man in the group, Adam Scott, who followed up his 64, his very impressive 64 yesterday with a 67 today, made six birdies to me, three on each side. Another really impressive round from the Australian.
While we were covering the action this morning, we were looking at him and he was through seven holes at the time. He might have been through eight, even with just two birdies and two bogeys through the day. And Scott Stanford was saying that, well, consistent. He's doing well. He's consistent. He's hanging in there. And since then, since that moment, he did a lot more than hang in there because he makes a birdie on nine, birdies 10 and 11, which are holes they're birdie holes for sure. And he simply takes advantage of them. And then he gets through the stretch of 12 through 16, where if you're just scrolling through scorecards, everybody's got at least a bogey in that 12 through 16 spot, whether it's 13 or 15, one of those holes, somebody's making a bogey there. And Adam Scott cruised through all those holes with pars, adds another birdie at 18. And now he's in the final group for the second year in a row at the Genesis Invitational.
This would be his first PGA Tour win since the 2018 WGC Cadillac Championship. But if you remember, he actually won his last start worldwide. Back at the end of 2019, he won the Australian PGA Championship. So not a lot of guys in the world can go back-to-back in any field.
I completely agree. I mean, this guy, you just got to look at – he's just so good. He's just a unique talent. And that tee to green – I know you're looking at his statistics and you're just salivating because this is like the – you just want an average putting. You want him to just not lose strokes putting tomorrow. And you probably – what do you think he can beat Rory? You think he's up in that mix?
So what I mentioned to you before we went hot was this – statistically, this is like the guy, right? When you're looking at it and you erase everybody's names – he's two shots clear on the rest of the field in strokes gained tee to green. He's gaining nearly 10 and a half. Russell Henley is the second at just a hair over eight. He's losing basically a half a shot putting this week over three rounds, which is like, yeah, keep doing what you're doing. Go keep – he's playing great around the greens. He's firing darts. He's hitting his driver well enough. And make one or two more putts tomorrow. And if he makes one or two more putts tomorrow, he might be raising the trophy.
I just have this worry with him, and I'm a huge Adam Scott fan, but I just have this worry with him where, and this always feels like this happens when I pick him. He's got a great round going. Things are going really well. And he gets to that one moment where he's got a birdie putt he's got a chance to two putt birdie on a par five. And on his second putt from 3.5 feet, he lifts it out and then it kind of ends his chances. And it's just like, that one little moment, I worry about the putter a little bit with him. I worry a little less about Rory and a little less about Kuchar. And maybe that's unfair, but I have this inkling because I pick Adam Scott a lot, especially at a course like this. If we had seen a little more form from him, I probably would have picked him this week. But I have concerns about that putter. And when you get in the moment and you have to make the putt now and it's the last hole or it's, you know, the 71st hole and you have the putt that Kuchar faced today to kind of turn momentum around, is Adam Scott going to make that putt? I have my doubts for sure.
Well, I think momentum is a big key around here as well, because a par save goes a long way around Riviera. So the Chase Group, the Chasers, let's talk about these guys a little bit differently. So we've got Russell Henley, Harold Varner III, Joel Damon, either one or two shots back. Damon is 8 under, 2 shots back. I'm going to leave out DJ for this conversation, which we'll talk about him separately. But out of those three, Henley, Varner, Joel Damon, not guys that win a lot on the PGA Tour, not guys that necessarily put themselves in contention a whole lot. Is there one of these guys you like more than another, or you like what you're seeing out of them?
I like what I'm seeing out of all three of these players. I think Joel Damon last year made a big statement. I think he really improved as a player last year overall and proved to himself that he really can't compete on the PGA Tour. Russell Henley is a guy who comes in without really making a lot of cuts. I think he missed 3 in a row at least?
I think it was 4. That's an understatement, as he hasn't been playing well.
So I know he's been struggling, but he's a guy who's won before and he gets in the moment. He can definitely get the job done. But Harold Varner III is really the guy that I'm looking at. He impressed me today. He played in the final group with Matt Kuchar and Rory McIlroy is a big kind of a pressure moment. And he had a situation where he was in the final group of the PGA Championship.
Yes, he was.
And he shot 81, something along those lines.
81 or 82, yeah. He was in the final group with Brooks.
That's right. And he made a birdie on the first hole. And yep. He got to number 4, and he lost a ball on number 4. And he hit a shot like basically he was in the fescue. And he hits a shot that doesn't get out, and the ball probably went 20 yards, and they lost it. They couldn't find it, and it derailed him for the rest of the round. And I have this feeling when moments like that happen, they can do one of two things for you. You can learn something from it, or it can make you fear the moment. And for Harold Varner III, that moment happened again today. Saturday is another one of those moments where, hey, I have a chance. I'm in the final group with these two other players. That pressure feels very similar. And he really stood up to it. I think he played a great round today. He really held his own, shooting 69 today. He beat Kuchar and was right there with Rory all day. I think that speaks a lot to him. So a more comfortable group tomorrow. Harold Varner's the guy I got my eye on.
Yeah, I suspect, and I think we saw a little bit of it today, that the scar tissue that he developed from that final round at the PGA Championship probably goes a long way in his career, and we hope to see him in more final groups. One guy who's been in a lot of final groups, and he's not going to be in one tomorrow, but very quietly 2 shots back is Dustin Johnson, who opened up 1 over par 72 on Thursday. I personally was like, we'll think about DJ next week or whatever it is. Shoots a 66 on Friday, a 67 today in the third round. And we talked about colorful scorecards with Brooks Koepka last night. Well, in his last 12 holes, DJ made 2 pars. The rest were all over the place, but he is right there lurking.
It's very interesting. Very, very interesting. I just remember last week at Pebble, he had that final round 78. That kind of concerns me a little bit. I'm not really sure what I'm going to get out of DJ. I don't really know. He's quietly right there. He's obviously an extremely talented player, obviously can handle the golf course. So there are very little concerns out of me, but he just has this potential to shoot some high scores on the final round. You look at last year in the playoffs, he finished 73, 71, 73 in his last 3 Sundays. The Open Championship, a 76. The U.S. Open, a 74. The RBC Heritage, a 77 out of nowhere. The Valspar, a 74. Now, he has shot some really nice rounds. I mean, he shot 66. He shot a number of nice rounds on Sunday. But there's just this one little part of me that kind of feels like tomorrow's not going to go DJ's way. And I hope I'm wrong. But DJ's a guy I have my eye on the following week in Mexico for sure. I don't think that's one that's too hard to figure out.
No.
But tomorrow, I don't know. I'm not feeling it, but it's definitely more of a hunch.
There's still more names. This is unbelievable. So if you go a little further, Bryson DeChambeau, he's 4 back with John Rahm. They're both tied for 11th. I'm going to leave Hideki out of this conversation for a second, but Bryson leads the field in strokes gained off the tee. John Rahm, just another, he's gone 70, 68, 69. I think it's going to take something really low. We'll talk about Hideki, like Hideki's shot today. Hideki was 7 under. I don't know if you can go out and shoot another 64 tomorrow, but I think that's what you're probably going to need from one of these guys at 6 under right now.
You probably need 63 or 64.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's kind of funny. John Rahm, like he's all of a sudden in this tournament.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. I bet you if you talk to him, he would feel like he doesn't belong to be in contention this week. It seems a little bit interesting that you're 6 under par on after the third round and you're within 4 shots and you're in tied 11th. There's not that many people that you have to pass. And some of these names that he has to pass, I mean, you got Luke List, who I think this is a good course for. You got Sung Kang and Taylor Gooch and Max Homa, Joel Damon, Harold Varner III, Russell Henley. I mean, these are guys that you can definitely, you would think, okay, I'm a better player than these guys. If you're a John Rahm, if you're a Bryson DeChambeau, the problem is the final group, you may not feel like you're all that much better. I mean, to give Rory McIlroy, Matt Kuchar, and Adam Scott 4 shots going into one round, with 3 of those guys of that caliber, that's really what I think almost eliminates this group.
If it was one of them, you could say, okay, maybe they just go out and shoot 1 under or 2 under tomorrow. But now that there's 3 of them at 10 under, there's probably a really good chance that one of them goes out and shoots 4 or 5 under and just wins the thing. But your note about John Rahm, it probably feels very weird for him to be in the situation. He's losing almost 1.5 strokes on approach this week, which, I mean, that's his skill set. He's gained in that category in 8 of his last 9 starts. He does it all the time. This is just a very awkward week for him. And shout out to Hideki, who moves up 46 spots today thanks to that 64, did actually card a bogey. So he was made more birdies and actually carded an eagle on number 10 today. This is what you expect to see out of Hideki. We just need not necessarily more of these rounds, but when you start 71, 72, you kind of already played yourself out of it.
Right. That you're exactly right. I mean, you just need in a tournament like this with the, nobody's going to come back to you. They're not going to go out and shoot 7 under and run away with it. We're not talking about the American Express here. But at the same time, you got to keep yourself in contention early. So for Hideki Matsuyama, we're seeing some solid play, really nice finishes, but he's not really showing any signs of being close to a victory. And you got to be concerned with the putter. He just is so reliant on that putter getting hot. For him to shoot 71 or 72, the way that he hits the ball is it's just not, it doesn't cut. It's not good enough. And it speaks to the putter for me.
Yeah. He lost another 2 strokes, putting, or has been losing 2 strokes over the course of this tournament. Is your scrolling finger ready? Cause I'm going to need you to scroll basically all the way down to the bottom of the leaderboard here to find our host, Tiger Woods, who, to say he's been leaking oil over the course of the last 2 days, I think would be a compliment. He's 5 over 76 today. He started on the back, went out in 5 over, played even on his second 9. This was just a really bad week for Tiger.
The back 9, not the back 9 that he played today, but holes 10 through 18 have just been brutal for him. I mentioned that stretch between 12 and 16 that's so hard. Well, he played those holes 4 over, and he bogeyed a par 5, the 11th. So that stretch has been really difficult for him. And in yesterday's round, it was 2 over in that stretch. He made a double on 15. So he has a really hard time in that stretch. And I think that threw him off a little bit yesterday. Holes 3 through 6, he played 3 over on those holes. His second 9s, generally speaking, have not been very, very good. Basically, 1 birdie on his second 9 until before today. And that was at number 1. That was his 10th hole. He made a 4 there, which everybody makes 4 there. We talked about that last night.
Yeah.
Now, fast forward to today, and he goes out on his first 9 and shoots that kind of a score, shooting 41. And he's on, I mean, we were literally talking about him being on 80 watch. The question was asked today, is he going to break 80? And he did. So I give him a lot of credit for that. I mean, he goes out there. He smokes it. He makes a couple of birdies 1 and 3, bogeys coming in, even par on that side. I mean, It's a frustrating day for him. Really struggling with the putter.
Yeah. Let me read you some putting stats while you nailed that. So yesterday he loses 1.8 strokes putting. Today he loses 4.8, which is by far the worst putting round he's ever had in my database. And from what I understand, it is his worst putting round of the Shot Link era. So you're talking about minus 6.7 putting in two rounds in which he went out on POA early in both of them. So he should have them in pretty good shape. I want to just say, obviously this is not Tiger. These are outlier, events, and Riviera just has his number and it's his kryptonite and let's forget all about it. But what say you?
You're right. This is his kryptonite. It's just a golf course that gives him a hard time. I guess the question I want to ask you is, when you look at that putting, his putting has been kind of, from a strokes gain perspective, deteriorating basically since it started. And it's just kind of getting worse and worse gradually over time. Are you worried about Tiger Woods' putting going forward, or do you think this is just the nature of the beast of Riviera that he has yet to find an answer to?
I lean more towards the latter. There obviously are a lot of tricky situations out there that fooled a lot of golfers. We know that this course yields some of the most three putts inside of, I think, both 3 and 5 feet. So it is a very tricky course. It is one that Tiger clearly has not wrapped his head around because he has not had the level of success around here. I think that is probably the biggest part of it. So I'm not willing to say, oh, this is much of a concern moving forward. But if we start to see this week in, week out, I mean, he has four putted at Torrey. He four putted this week. It's like the only two times he's done it in the last 15 years or something crazy. 1998 was the only other season with multiple four putts. So, I mean, I know that's one hole, in each of those events, but it's weird.
It is definitely weird. It is only one hole. I give him a little bit of a pass on it. I think that it's a golf course that he just doesn't know very well. Torrey was a little questionable though. Bringing Torrey into the mix definitely raises some eyebrows, but I got to think when you get Tiger on a course like, I'll just say it, Augusta National, I think he's going to be able to figure out the putt in. And by that time, I think he'll have it ironed out. He's kind of changed. Not playing next week was a surprising move for me because of the Olympics.
Yeah.
I think he's just really honing in on one tournament again, and I think he'll be ready for it.
I would completely agree. I think he measures his own success in majors and specifically green jackets, and I think that's what he's looking forward to. He's going to go out with Brendan Todd and JJ Spahn tomorrow, so should be quite the group. All right, Greg, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our sponsors, and then we are going to talk about our predictions for next week. So right after these words. I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play, because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com. Okay. It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, we're back. Greg, real quick one and done update, because Kyle Porter has been flying up the leaderboard over the last 2 days, thanks to Adam Scott flying up the leaderboard in the last 2 days. So he's got himself a share of the 1.1 million points thus far. We'll see if that holds tomorrow. Producer Jacob getting a lot of late results from Dustin Johnson, who's now currently in sixth. Myself and Mark Immelman, we are fading with Patrick Cantlay, who was looking so great after 18. Our big boss, Eric Kay, with Tony Finau, he is getting basically, it might as well be $0 because it's 21,000. And then the Bubba Watson crew, yourself, Greg, and Michael Kaiser on the outside looking in this weekend. But it looks like Kyle's going to make up a lot of ground on us.
Kyle's making up a ton of ground. And hey, good for him. It's a great pick. Turned out to be a great pick. His reasoning is a little suspect, I guess. But hey, I guess you know we'll be watching tomorrow.
So whatever
that's,
works.
That's exciting. But yeah, Adam Scott looking great. As for my pick and Michael Kaiser's pick, I'm happy to miss the cut with Bubba Watson. If he was sitting where Adam Scott is sitting right now and I didn't pick him, I would be quite upset. So I can take this one. I'll bite the bullet. I can deal.
Okay. As far as predictions go, I want to get two names from you. Basically, since there is a three-way tie at 10 under, I want you to pick one of those guys, but then I also want you to give us someone in the chase groups. Obviously, much more unlikely that they come up and win, but like, who would you think has the best chance of kind of coming out of the, I don't know, handful of shots back?
Okay, I think six under is too far back. I'll start with the chase group. Okay. I think the guys at six under are just a little bit too far back. I mean, if you're going to say our prediction 13 under is a playoff, 14 to win, I have a hard time seeing six under holding up if they go out and shoot seven under. So I'm going to stick above that in the 7 to 8 number group, and I'm going to actually go up all the way up to Harold Varner. I think Harold Varner is going to have a great round tomorrow. Comfortable group for him. He's only one shot back, which I think is a big advantage. And I think he really proved a lot to himself today, learning from the PGA Championship last year. So he's the guy in the chase group. Then we go to the top three, and probably the least popular pick of all three of these, Matt Kuchar. That's the guy that I'm going to go with.
Okay. Here's where I'm at. I'm going to go a little deeper. I generally agree. I do think six under is too far back, but there is a guy here who would fit everything that I'm looking for, and it's Bryson. So Bryson's gained seven and a half strokes tee to green, and he's losing a shot and a half on the greens. He leads the field off the tee, and he has yet to have that like really low round. So he's gone 3 under, 1 under, and 2 under to get to his 6 under total. I think he's gonna need to shoot. Man, I think you're right. I think 64 might get him into a playoff. 60,
maybe.
Oh man, it's so low. He'd have to go so low. Yeah, this is bad. But that's the guy. He'd have to shoot something really, really low and hope to get into a playoff.
You're right. And you're right. You could see a post like that. You don't know what's going to happen. I find it unlikely. I think with Rory and Kuchar and Scott, if they see somebody charge up there and post 13 under, I mean, you got the par 5 17th. I feel like they're going to figure out a way to get past whatever's posted.
I agree with you. Okay. Yeah. And then the top of the board, I'm going to stick with the guy that I think if he putts neutral tomorrow, all other indicators are a really good sign. And I love Rory, but like Adam Scott looks so good on paper. like it's terrifying. Like I love Rory so much, but I think Adam's the guy.
And you love looking at the paper. Right. I do too. I mean, you're right. He's good. And by the way, I've never heard anybody say Adam Scott looks good on paper. Most people say he looks good in person.
Well, this week, I guess it's both.
He does look good, man. He's swinging so good. It's great to see.
All right, Greg, final thoughts heading into Riviera. You got any for us?
Love the golf course. Awesome. I want to see a major championship at this golf course. I mean, it really does so much. One, it kind of to me squashes the distance debate. We're seeing great challenge out here on a golf course that's not excessively long. And it's just pure golf. I mean, the thing that normally scares PGA Tour players is wind and water. That's usually when you see guys not go low. There's wind and water. This place has neither. and they're still not going that low. So
there's barely not even any out of bounds around here. Like it really is a testament to a well-designed course that you don't need gimmicks and you don't need distance for that can make the best players in the world face a challenge. I love it.
Yeah, it's a pure challenge. I couldn't agree more. So I love it.
All right. That will do it for this episode of The First Cut. If you've liked what you heard, do us a favor. Leave us a rating and review. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. We're going to be back for another episode after the final round tomorrow to break everything down and congratulate Adam Scott on his victory. So in the meantime, make sure to follow Greg Ducharme on Twitter. He is at TheRealGFD. And you can get me on Twitter. I'm at RickRunGood. And we'll see you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.